Track 4. Three Red Flags. On the last track, we talked about three stages of abuse. Now, let's talk about increasing the batterer's awareness of his abuse. As you know, many batterers report feelings of sudden rage. I find that increasing my client's awareness of their red flags to violence can help to stop the chain of events that lead to their abuse. I introduced this discussion to the group by pointing out how a driver's awareness of a road construction crew's red flag helps to stop traffic. As you know, the group has to understand the cycle of violence and how it progresses from the buildup of tension to the violent action and finally into the honeymoon phase. What I wanted to impress upon Daniel, who was discussed on a previous track, is that the cycle of violence doesn't remain constant, but escalates into ever-raising tension and fewer honeymoon phases. In order for Daniel to break his cycle, he had to start identifying cues. Ask yourself, what cues does the Daniel you're currently treating need to identify regarding his physical violence? I outlined three types of cues or indications that violence may occur for the group. These cues or indicators are situational cues, emotional cues, and cognitive cues. Think of a male batterer whom you're currently treating or have treated. Would it be beneficial to describe these three cues or red flags to your client? Red flag number one, situational cues. Situational cues can include such situations as a particular topic of conversation, the time of day during which an argument occurs, stopping off at a bar before returning home, etc. I've known many clients who become abusive right after they get home from work or when bills are to be paid. In your next session with your Daniel, you might consider asking him if there are certain situational cues regarding a topic discussed or time of the incident, which acts as a signal or indicator or a red flag that violence is going to occur. Think for a moment about your physically abusive client. Do you feel it would be beneficial to discuss the time of day or other recurring circumstances that precede their physical violence? For example, for Tony, a construction worker in the group, arguments took place every other Friday. As you might guess, every other Friday was payday, and Tony stopped off for a couple of drinks prior to coming home from work. So ask yourself, are there situational cues of which your client needs to increase his awareness of in order to prevent another battering incident? Red flag number two, emotional cues. Emotional cues are the feelings batterers experience before an abusive situation occurs. In one session, I asked Daniel how he felt before he strangled Sarah and threw her across the room. Daniel stated, "I felt really annoyed. I felt like Sarah was being bitchy and lazy. Like last night. I come home, I'm tired, but the minute I'm in the door, she's all over me, blah blah this, blah blah that. For her, it's just, here's someone I can dump my crap on. She doesn't give a crap about me. All I do is work my tail off for this family, and this is the thanks I get. After she starts nagging, whatever she says or does only makes things worse because I'm already mad at her." As you know, physical feelings are closely tied to emotional feelings and can also act as red flags regarding the emotions that lead to abuse. Here's an example of Daniel's description of his emotional red flag. He stated, "When I get angry, my heart starts pounding, my stomach tenses up, and my face turns red." Think of a physically abusive client you're currently treating. Would a discussion of emotional red flags be beneficial in your next session? Red flag number three. In addition to situational and emotional red flags, cognitive red flags might include the client's self-talk and mental images that precede abuse. I asked Daniel to describe his thoughts or internal dialogue prior to an abusive incident. I asked Daniel, in other words, what were you thinking just prior to the incident? Daniel stated, "Sometimes when I come home from work, a babysitter's there with Jake, and I don't know where Sarah is. I tell myself, if she doesn't get home by 10:30, she must be whoring around. So when she gets in the door, I'm going to let her have it." I found that a good technique to increase batterers' awareness of situational, emotional, and cognitive red flags is the requirement of a weekly log. If clients balk at this homework assignment as being silly or unnecessary, I motivate them with the reminder that non-compliance may result in a negative recommendation to the judge. For Daniel, his log described times during the week when he felt like he might abuse Sarah. When he avoided abusive behavior, I asked him to write about the alternative behaviors he employed. For Daniel, the answer was as simple as walking out of the room and focusing his attention on something else, like the television. so that Sarah wasn't in his line of sight. This prevented Daniel from being angered by the sight of Sarah after she said something that Daniel found irritating. I have found, as I'm sure you have, that sometimes when clients complete a weekly log, they tend to take more responsibility for their actions and become better able to use alternative behaviors. In addition to reducing his violent behavior, Daniel was made more aware of what caused him to become violent. Daniel was also able to start to accept that it wasn't Sarah's fault he punched her in the head. As you know, acceptance and accountability are key. Take a self-inventory for a moment. Do you struggle to resist judgment of clients who don't easily acknowledge that their victims were not responsible for the abuse? After Daniel became more aware of his own behavior and began to accept responsibility without blaming Sarah as much, he was able to better control himself and his violent actions. An increased awareness of his red flags regarding situational, emotional, and cognitive cues helped Daniel to begin controlling his violent outbursts. In Violence in Intimate Relationships, Monroe addressed violent outbursts of batterers in a study of the typology of male batterers. Monroe found that both the dysphoric and the generally violent antisocial groups had the highest scores on the measures of borderline personality and traumatic stress. Her study drew two conclusions. The first conclusion that Monroe made was that the batterer's impulsivity is reflected in measures of both antisocial and borderline personality. So generally, violent antisocial men may also report impulsive, borderline-type behaviors. The second conclusion Monroe's study made was connecting PTSD with violent behavior. Monroe stated, "Given the high levels of violence experienced both in childhood and as adults by the generally violent antisocial men, it's not surprising that they report symptoms of PTSD." The next track will deal with expanding choice points once a client begins to recognize these three red flags. Question 4. What are the three red flags that can precede abuse?